What's going on, everybody? I'm Johnny Brook. Welcome back to episode number 5 of the Crafted Podcast. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, James Wright from Wood by Wright. How you doing, James?
I'm doing fine. Why, thank you.
And I'm also joined by Zach Herber-Holz from ZH Fabrications. What's up, Zach?
How's it going? I'm going to unmute really quick while my barking dog settles down.
Yeah, I hear that. You've got one of those little yappy dogs. So anyway, if you guys are new to the podcast, this podcast is all about making stuff by hand. We talk about woodworking, metalworking, leather, electronics, and more. We publish new episodes every Wednesday. The podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, pretty much everywhere podcasts are available. And if you want to learn more about the podcast, check out our website at craftedpodcast.com. We live stream every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time, so definitely join us live. It's a lot of fun to chat with you guys live. And last, if you want to help support the show a little bit, give us a rating on iTunes. That's the biggest way for us to get in front of more ears. So we're actually doing a back-to-back episode tonight. We're recording 2 episodes in a row. We've got Thanksgiving coming up next week here in the States. And, you know, we're not going to be sitting in front of our computer on Thursday night, the night of Thanksgiving. So let's go ahead and get this first episode of the Double Ender going. So what have you guys been working on this week? Who wants to kick us off?
I've actually been working on the dresser.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been sitting on the back burner for long enough, but actually, as of tonight, I believe the carcass is completed, other than a few finishing touches that'll do after the drawers are in. But yeah, it's all solid and there, which is kind of cool.
That's awesome, man. That is so you got through that marathon drawer session. I know that was
no, I haven't like done the drawers yet.
Oh,
just the
okay.
carcass.
Just the carcass. Okay,
the carcass is done.
Gotcha.
one at a time.
Still have the drawers impending then.
Yeah, next week it'll be drawer number 1, and the week after that will be drawer number 2.
Man, that's brutal. Well, that's cool, man. That's exciting. I've actually got a friend of mine who's interested in me building some, you know, kind of a mission style table, and uses a lot of white oak, kind of similar to your project there. And I'm hoping it comes through, because I've never worked with white oak to that extent. And man, the dresser's just turned out beautiful. That is,
I love white oak with the rays. It's just so much. It's a blast. It's a fun wood.
Yeah, yeah. It's between you and then William Walker, he uses a lot of it too. You two have totally been getting me excited about oak, you know, because I don't know, I feel like in my mind oak was this kind of dated look in a lot of ways, you know what I mean? I think a lot of furniture from, you know, 20 years ago and on was made, especially with red oak, I think, but now I think, you know, it's just all depends on the actual style of the piece, not necessarily the wood. So, yeah, I think I'm finally coming around on oak a little bit. But, yeah, it's beautiful. How about you, Zach? What's going on in your workshop? I know you've been doing some finishing tonight.
Yeah, you know, you missed the last part. I just did a whole bunch of unfinishing.
Yeah,
so
that's
it was a day of an entire day of finishing followed by about 3 hours of unfinishing.
Oof. So what happened?
So I'm working on that slab table, which I'm super excited about. And I got the HVLP gun that showed up, which is incredible, from Homestead Finishing. And thing's awesome. It's night and day. I mean, you don't realize, compared to like the woodcraft stuff, how much better it shoots and atomizes. And it's just, you know, you can actually, the threads are actually real. You can actually unscrew stuff. So yeah, it's a really nice gun, but so I figured I was going to shoot it with some trans tint, the reddish brown dye, to kind of just give it a, you know, a little bit of an undertone. I was going to do that and then top it off with a toner of kind of a darker brown. Well, for some reason, this cherry, I mean, it was like fire engine red after the first toner. It just, and I did shoot it on a small test piece, but that cherry, it just, it went so red, and I thought, okay, well, might clean up with this brown toner. So I shot it with brown toner, and I stared at it for a couple hours and tried to convince myself I liked it. And then I'm like, I can't live with myself if I let this thing go. It just, I mean, it looked nice. The quality was fantastic, and the heartwood looked great. It looked like kind of a reddish walnut almost, but the sapwood on the side, the white just it just, it was so rad. It was just in your face. So I just planed it down. So I'm going to start over tomorrow morning.
That is annoying. I feel like stains and dyes are just so finicky. I mean, it's, you know, you can do as much test pieces as you want, but every piece of wood is different, and depending on how much sanding you do, or how much, you know, even how much sawdust is embedded into the pores on that piece from your sanding can have an effect. You know, it's just, I ran into the same thing with that farmhouse table. That stain went on way darker than my test piece, and, you know, with that, I think it was I didn't wipe it off quick enough, and there's just so many variables. It's hard to predict.
But, you know, I'm trying to be positive about it and convince myself that I learned a lot. I did learn a lot as far as spraying toner. That was the first time I ever did it. First time I actually ever mixed my own shellac, too, which was
nice.
Kind of interesting. Give yourself plenty of time on that, by the way. it does take a couple hours at least. But James was telling me he usually does it the night before, which sounds like a good strategy.
That's fine. Well, I actually keep a jar of it on hand.
Yeah.
And whenever it gets down to about a half inch left in the jar, then I just mix up another one in the jar.
Yeah. Nice. I did find, because I mixed up two batches today, that, you know, it comes in a bag usually. Squeeze the crap out of it and smash it and crinkle it like you would with potato chips. Because when it's smaller like that, it dissolves way faster.
Yeah.
So if you're mixing your own shellac, make sure to, you know, step on the bag and squish it and smash it and try and get the smallest particles of shellac you can. It almost halved the amount of time it took to dissolve it the second batch. So,
yeah.
But yeah, you know, I try and, you know, look at it and think that I learned something from it. And spraying toner is different for anybody who hasn't done it. You almost kind of fog it on. You change the spray pattern really fine. And I think that might have been why it turned out so red, is that I was pretty much laying it on like you would with a normal finish, and I don't think you're supposed to do that.
Yeah.
The second batch, I really dialed down the fluid nozzle and, you know, got the atomization a lot finer, and you just kind of almost missed it on. I think it gives you more control. So
were you mixing it, the tint, into the shellac, or doing a separate coat of the tint?
The definition of a toner, as per Jeff Jewett's books, at least that's where I got that information, is it's essentially a toner is when you mix in a dye or a pigment with your finish. So you can actually, you know, you can actually use it in, if you're doing water based, you can just mix it in with whatever. Shellac is nice because, you know, it's less expensive. It sprays easy and
dries really fast.
Yeah. And it sticks to, you know, pretty much it's the universal sealer. So
yeah,
almost.
Huh? Yeah. I've only ever used pre-mixed shellac, and I've only ever used like a pre-mixed, dye stain that's already comes, you know, in a can ready to roll. So those are both new to me. I know shellac out of the can, I've been a little disappointed with, cause I think it's a really kind of heavy, viscosity. I think it needs to be thinned even more out of the can.
In the can is such a thick mass.
What are you using? Are you using like the Zinsser seal coat stuff?
It's the, what is it? It's not the seal coat. It's just their amber shellac or whatever. That's, I've only used it on one or two things. And it dried so fast that I could not get a smooth surface. And it wasn't thin enough to actually lay down thin. So it left like really kind of bumpy, crappy looking areas.
I would give, I'd give their 2 pound cut sanding sealer, the D-Wax shellac. That stuff is awesome. And what I've found with that stuff is it applies way easier with a rag than with a brush.
Yeah.
Use like a t-shirts. I think Woodcraft, it's like one of the best things they sell, is just like a bag of recycled white t-shirts, and wad those up to where there's no wrinkles, like it's a pad on the bottom side, and dunk it in that 2 pound shellac, and it goes on thin enough to where it's probably the easiest thing to apply. Great sanding sealer. So I'd give that a shot.
But that wouldn't be a finish on its own, right? Or could it be?
It could. You'd have to build it up a lot, but
yeah,
could.
Yeah, yeah. If any time I've used the Zinsser, that amber, I'll mix it half and half with denatured alcohol.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I actually use blue shop towels for my applicator.
Mm-hmm.
It goes on just like a t-shirt. You just have to be careful because it rips easier.
Yeah, do you get any fuzz with that? Because I've been using paper towels, and I've noticed a lot of fuzzies.
Not paper towel, but like the blue shop towels.
Okay.
I don't get it with
t-shirts,
that.
T-shirts, man.
Yeah.
Those. Now, if it's really thin, like if I was using a wipe-on poly,
uh-huh.
I don't use it for that. I would go with a t-shirt.
Hmm.
But usually the surface is smooth enough that I don't have any problem with it. It's just if there's anything pilling on it, then it'll grab it. And
usually the first coat, you know, it's really thin. I mean, that's what that 2-pound cut is for, is, you know, a sanding sealer. And use some 400 grit sandpaper, and light is the key. If you use 400 grit sandpaper and just, I mean, no downward pressure, it'll knock all the burrs off and you'll have a really nice finish. I mean, to lay something else on top of.
Yeah. Go ahead, James.
I use a 2-pound cut for all my coats. I end up putting like 5 or 6 coats of shellac on for if I'm doing a shellac finish.
Yeah.
But I'll use a brown paper bag in between, actually.
Mm. I've heard that.
To kind of burnish it.
It doesn't it doesn't sand it, so you don't get the little bit of grit in there. You don't get the chalky dust look. It just kind of like burnishes the surface.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, finishing is obviously, man, there's
100 ways to do it.
Man, there's 100 ways to do one type. You know what I mean? Like, that's,
yeah.
it's overwhelming. Yes. It's like every project, I want to try something new, but then at the same time, every time you try something new, there's a learning curve. So it's... Yeah.
Every single person you talk to is going to have a completely different method.
Yeah, yeah, man, don't even try to Google this stuff because you'll spend, you know, it's... what's his name? Shannon on Wood Talk always says, you know, it's basically you research it so much that then you don't want to do anything. You know, it's... I can't remember the phrase, but yeah, I get caught up in that because
paralysis.
Exactly. Paralysis by analysis. Yeah. Cause I'm still so new to a lot of this stuff that, you know, a lot of times the things I'm doing, it's the first time I've ever done it. So, I don't want to screw it up. So I've researched the heck out of it, and man, it's woodworking is tough. Cause man, there's a million ways to skin each of these, you know, cats. So yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I'd like to try to mix my own shellac. I think that'd be cool. Especially, I mean, with HVLP, that'd be great. Or, I mean, I think with like these bowls that I'm going to be turning, I want to finish that I can get done in an afternoon. You know what I mean? Like, I love oil based finishes, but man, like armor seal takes at least 6 to 8 hours.
I've heard a lot of people use super glue for lathe stuff.
Yeah, CA glue.
Yeah.
It's
you can actually do a shellac very similar to how you do super glue, in that it'll dry while spinning, and then it keeps going, and you're just burnishing it after that.
Huh. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it usually cures pretty. That's one of my favorite things about shellac, and I think that's one of the reasons it's nice for a toner, is because at least where I'm at, that it dries to the touch, and you know, 15 minutes you can, you know, it's.
Well, it dissolves into itself. That's the nice thing. You know, each coat, since it's more mm-hmm. alcohol, it just kind of evens it out. So, yeah, I need to give it more of a chance. I know Guy from Guy's Woodshop is super into shellac. I know when I visited his shop a couple months ago, he was, I mean, he can put on, you know, you can put on 9 or 10 coats in an afternoon, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I know, like, Mike Pekovich had a whole article on applying shellac in a couple of fine woodworking issues ago. But, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I mean, I guess so, talking about lathe stuff, that's what I've been working on, and man, I am pretty excited.
Oh, that's right,
man.
You fell down that hole,
dude. It is ridiculous. Like, I've spent 2 days just like watching videos, and you know, because I've always watched Frank Howard's stuff, but before like actually owning a lathe, I don't think, you know, like I what he was doing on screen was cool, but I didn't really grasp it. You know, I didn't realize there's like 20 different types of chucks, and you know, there's so many ways to mount a bowl, and it's ridiculous. Cutting segments is a whole system, and it's ridiculous.
I think that's one of the coolest things about this whole like realm of building stuff is that you get to like choose, you know, there's too many fields of making that you can't do them all. I mean, really can't. I mean, you might be able to dabble in them, but like you can't master you know, wood turning and finishing and metalwork and leather and electronics. You can't, I mean, like I say, you might be able to, this isn't a challenge. I don't need anybody to tell me they can do all these, but like
Exhibit A, you know, Jimmy DiResta.
Gonna say.
Well, I mean,
but he doesn't do electronics stuff that much. I mean, I guess he does CNC, but he, you know, Arduino, like he's like anti Arduino, so he won't learn it.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is like, you really can't master all of them.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, the guy's, you know, probably my favorite YouTuber, but he's not the best machinist. He's not the best leather worker. He's not the best, but he's pretty good at everything he does, you know?
Yep.
But what's cool is that you get to choose. I mean, everybody gets to kind of become their own like maker superhero. Like, are you going to do metalwork and, you know, wood turning? Or are you going to do, you get to like choose these things that you want to develop. And I think that's super neat because you get all these people and they all have, you know, different skill sets. It's pretty neat.
No, it's awesome. And I mean, I think for me, you know, while turning bowls and stuff is cool, I think the thing I'm most excited about is incorporating turned pieces into the furniture I'm building. 'Cause that seems to be like what I'm drawn to is building these larger pieces, whether that's tables or desks or what have you. But obviously being able to incorporate turn stuff adds so much between spindles and legs and, I mean, even knobs, and just there's so many things that I can add extra little custom touches. It's going to be really cool. And I have I got a really big lathe right off the bat. It's 1644, so 44 inches between, you know, spindles. So, or not spindles, between the headstock and tailstock. So I have room to do basically anything I'd want to do on it. So I'm pretty excited to dig into it, man.
Does it have a turning head?
Yes, it does. So I can do
it. Oh, nice.
I can do it outboard.
You can do it all.
Yeah, pretty much, man. This thing is a monster. So this is I'm using a Nova, what's it called? A Nova Galaxy. So it's the same motor system as is on the Nova drill press I have. And so the cool thing, if you guys haven't seen it in some of my videos, all of their machines, these types of machines feature a like digital LED system that, so let's say I'm turning a bowl that's 12 inches in diameter. I can set that diameter. I can tell it whether I'm roughing or finishing, and it will automatically suggest the RPM I should be turning at and automatically set it to that RPM. It's really crazy. Same thing on the drill press. Like if I'm drilling a 2-inch hole with a Forstner bit in a hardwood versus aluminum versus steel, it'll know what RPM I should be doing that at. So it is, it's a really cool setup.
I want a piece of shop equipment that like makes me lunch because I'm too lazy to go inside, or I'm too busy. You know, I'm always like right in the middle of something and I forget to eat.
Yeah.
None of my tools have digital readouts.
No.
Want that.
Yeah. You need your plane to tell you how thin of a shaving you're taking. You should build that in, man. Just for kicks, like
digital readout.
April
yes.
Fool's this year. Somehow incorporate an Arduino into a hand plane.
That was just the most sacrilege possible.
I mean, that's still hand tools, though, right? I mean, come on, like you're using, make it solar powered, so you're not technically using. Sure. Electric,
or like one of those crank flashlights.
Yeah,
What's that that router that like the handheld router that has like the screen and it's pretty much like a handheld CNC
shaper?
Yeah, they should. You could do that with like a hand chisel.
That's funny. Yeah, man. Yeah, you should totally do that, James. That would be awesome. That would be awesome. Well, cool. Well, I guess let's move into this show topic. So this is an interesting one. I know this is a topic we've been kicking around for a while, and it's been done before by other people. But I think it's always interesting to hear everybody's perspective on this. And that is basically $1,000 to start a shop, and then we're adding an extra little component If you had another $1,000 after that first, what tools would you add kind of from that base? So I actually haven't given this a ton of thought. So, you know, I see that Zach has done his research here. So
yeah,
I'll let Zach go first. This is some impressive stuff you got going on there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually like jumped on 5 minutes beforehand and posted, actually, you know, thought this one through.
Nice.
Let's see, where does it start here? All right, so for $1,000, this is kind of different because I actually started out doing metalworking. So I started out with, you know, a welder and an angle grinder, but that's over $1,000, so I'll save that for the upgrade part.
Yeah.
So for the $1,000, I think what I would do is probably the best bang for the buck. There's this DeWalt kit, and it doesn't have to be DeWalt. I'm not sponsored by them or anything. I've always liked their tools for the money. It's just kind of my go-to. But you know, I suggest you stick with one brand because that way you can share batteries, and that just makes sense. So DeWalt makes this pack, five tool combo pack. Actually, let me pull up the link here.
Yeah.
So
I'm looking at that now, man. I have all of those tools, and they are all great.
Yeah.
And all very useful.
So it comes with, I don't even have all of these tools. I bought them separate, but this is definitely the cheaper way to go. Although, yeah. So this five pack kit comes with the circular saw. This is their 20 volt battery system. It comes with the circular saw, the impact or hammer drill, and a little impact drill, sawzall, and a flashlight. I don't necessarily think that you need, you know, the sawzall, the flashlight, and the hammer drill, but for $400, I mean, you're going to spend that much money if you buy two free pieces separate. So, and best of all, you get, looks like you get 2 3-amp-hour batteries, and 20 volt batteries are expensive. So that is definitely a good deal. You can get that for $400
and sell the reciprocating saw if you're not going to use that much. I mean, I know for probably most of us, that's more of a demo tool or a, you know, true kind of job site contractor tool, and not something we were going to be using, you know, day to day.
You could sell that thing for probably $70, no problem. But you know, a lot of people, if you're just starting out, you're probably going to start with pallet wood. That's like how a lot of people are, or at least at some point, somebody is going to want you to make, you know, that ubiquitous wine holder thing out of a pallet or something. And the sawzalls are the best way to take a pallet apart. So keep that on hand.
True.
They're handy.
That is
true. They are definitely handy to have. I'd keep it. I don't use mine often, but when I do, there's really no alternative.
Well, and you can cut metal pretty effectively with the right blade on a sawzall. So, you know, if you wanted to do some basic metal stuff, that would be a good way to do it.
So that's that covers $400. And as far as, you know, even if you are only going to spend $500 or less, that would definitely be the way to go, because there is so much basic stuff and you can develop so many skills with just a circular saw and a drill. I mean, you can cut wood and you can screw it together. I mean, that's like the first step. That's if you're a carpenter. I'm not even going to finish that sentence because some carpenter is going to tell me I suck, but you can do a lot with a circular saw and a drill. Those are like your right and left hand. So after that, let's see, the other thing I had on there was just a compound miter saw.
Yep.
You can actually cut accurate miters with it easily. Something that you can sort of do with a circular saw, but not near as accurately or easily.
Efficiently, man. That's the big thing to me. I think the miter saw is absolutely, you know, a great, I mean, that was the first tool I bought when I moved into this house. You know, I already had a drill just for hanging pictures and stuff, but a miter saw is just so useful.
Yeah, it's really quick and it's really efficient. And there's kind of two schools of thought I've noticed. Some people say when they get their table saw, they never use their miter saw. It's it's so quick. If you're not, you know, there's merits to both, and I'm never going to get rid of my miter saw.
Especially if a place to just have it constantly set up, then it's fantastic. Yeah.
If you have to cut a 20 foot board in half, I can do it way faster on my miter saw than you can on your table saw.
Well, and safer. I mean, that's the thing, you know, I mean, cutting a 20 foot board in half on a table saw is really awkward. I mean, that would be, I think, where a table saw,
especially if you need to cut like 20 inches off of a 20 foot.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you could use a circular saw there, but, I mean, to me,
you have a cord.
Oh, go ahead.
You have a cordless saw, so why would you do either of those?
Yeah, yeah, true. I mean, to me, the miter saw is so much taken to another level when you get a stop block system on it. I mean, I use my miter saw all the time. Like, I even use it for pretty big crosscuts because I have a 12-inch miter saw that is, you know, it's a sliding miter saw. So I can crosscut, like, up to 15-plus inches. And I've got a stop block system, man, it is dead accurate. So I use it way more than my table saw for that kind of stuff. I very rarely really do the table saw for cross cutting unless it's very small pieces. So
yeah, and even if you do have to, if you do have the stop block system, you can always cut what you can with a non sliding miter saw, flip over the board, and cut the rest of it.
Exactly.
You know, cut the other half.
Or lift.
If you have a stop block system, it should line up pretty well. But
yeah.
Anyway, so that puts it up to $600. We have 1,000, so my next choice would be an Amazon Prime membership because if you're getting into this stuff, you're going to be ordering stuff all the time. And the $100 that you spend, I think it's $100 a year. It's seriously one of the best things I've ever spent my money on.
It is so ridiculously worth it.
Everybody probably already has that, so I shouldn't even have put that on there. But if you don't, you should.
Yeah, I don't think you had to count that in your tool budget, man. That's like a household thing, you know. Everybody who lives in America should have a Prime membership. Realistically, I mean, the fact that you can have almost anything in the world shipped to your door in 2 days is just magical.
Yeah, I get overnight on most things because the distribution center is 10 miles away.
See, I never do because I live in the country, but I have to drive 30 minutes to get some of these, you know, weird specialty items that aren't available in Mars Hill. So, yeah, I'd rather wait 2 days than have to drive an hour round trip to get something, you know. You're at $600. The Prime membership, I don't think we count that, but that is a great point.
You know
point,
what?
Though.
I did the
point.
Math beforehand, and I'm not going to do it again. So we're up at $700.
All right.
If you have that extra $100, do we have a Patreon yet?
No, we do not. But you can use.
Okay. If you have that extra $100, set us up with a Patreon and give it to us.
Joshua Luther in the chat just mentioned that Prime is available for $79 on Black Friday. So
There
you go. So you can do a little more math there. So now you've got.
Yeah, but you're a student. If you don't, I mean, you're gonna. There's things when you start building stuff. You're gonna spend. I mean, obviously, if you're already gonna spend $1,000 to get into this, you're just gonna spend hours on end scouring things for your next project and stuff. So it's nice to be able to just, and still, it's just bred into me that, that I usually wait until I have a certain amount of stuff. And then I have to remind myself, I'm like, no, I don't have to wait to get like $100 to get free shipping. So I'll have a basket full of stuff that's just waiting. And then I'm like, wait a minute. This is free. Why am I waiting?
Anytime I need anything, I order it like instantly, even if it's like $3. Because I mean, I don't care if Amazon loses their shirt on shipping because that's built into their business model. And you know, I wanted it as soon as possible. So yeah, that's most of my Amazon orders are a single item, and most of those items are really low cost. So they probably lose money on me every year, I would imagine.
So that's $700. Now it leaves you $300 for a workbench. That's crucial. It's, I did a lot of work before having a workbench, but the amount of time and energy and effort and frustration I save by being able to hold what I'm working on the way I want to hold it, or have a flat surface that's big enough, or, you know, just, it's really essential. It's, I'd feel like I'd be in the Stone Ages without one. So,
Yep.
Yeah, that's crucial. That's $300 towards a workbench, or $400 if you already have an Amazon account. So,
and I mean, that's power tool or hand tool, because realistically, yeah, man, one of these workbenches with a ton of work holding options, I still don't have one, and I just know that even, you know, like using a router, or there's so many things where you need to be able to hold your work effectively, you know, or use the odd hand tool that I use. It is just so valuable. I don't have a single vice in my woodworking area, and it's just, I know I need one. I know I need to build my bench. So it's, yeah, they're super valuable.
I remember when I started, I had like the one that you buy from Home Depot, and it's like, you know, plywood with, I mounted like a metal vise on the corner of it, and just, you know, it opens up to like 5 inches. And anytime you have to clamp a piece of wood, you have to like find something that you can pad the jaws with so that it doesn't leave teeth marks in it. And then you really rank on it, and the whole table wobbles and moves across the shop. And it's just it's like a solid C minus. It's barely useful.
And see, I built mine based on the, you know, Matthias Wandel. He did a, like, cheap solid core workbench video, and I built mine based on his plan. And it's awesome. I mean, it's, you know, it's heavy. It doesn't rack or anything. The way it's constructed is really nice, but it has no work holding options. And the top hangs over the, like, apron by a couple inches, so it's really awkward to clamp anything down. It's next to impossible because that apron kind of blocks the clamps, and it's just a pain. So it was definitely not designed with work holding in mind, because there are no vices on it. So yeah
sounds like you could use that circular saw and just trim it up flush.
I could, but then I'd lose like 4 inches off of each side and make the workbench way narrower. I don't know if it'd be worth it. I just know that I'm going to be building a new workbench one day, so This is gonna become my thing, I think, that the always waiting workbench just been sitting there, just really seasoning.
Sort of like a dresser, I know.
Yeah, it's just acclimatizing to my shop. The wood is, you know, I got to really make sure it's reached equilibrium before I get started on it.
Yeah. So that covers 1,000. Should I do the bonus 1,000? It's pretty small list.
Let's come around on that.
All right.
So, James, you want to go next? Because I know you have a totally different answer.
I have to kind of answer this in
two
different ways.
Yeah.
Because, number one, I haven't spent $1,000 on my shop tools yet. Because my personal philosophy is you should remodel and restore your tools so that, number one, you know how they work and you know them a little more intimately. And it gives you a little more pride when you're using them. And number two, if at all possible, you should make your own tools.
Yeah.
And so like the workbench and things like that. And at that point, things just become dirt cheap. I mean, I started with $12 and I bought a rusty plane. I got a saw free with a rebate at the local big box store. I got a set of chisels for $6.
Yeah.
And I started woodworking with that. So, I mean, if you're going to go that way, you're really not going to be limited by money. You're going to be limited by what you can actually find, because it means you're spending a lot of time going to garage sales. You're spending a lot of time at estate sales and Craigslist and running around. So you're wasting a lot of time, but you're saving a lot of money. So to kind of answer the question, for $1,000 to start over, I'd like to actually answer it with, I'm going to go buy everything new.
Cool.
As that doesn't really fit my personality and style, but I think that answers the question the best.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, this goes without saying, we're mentioning mostly new stuff, but used stuff is awesome. We all have bought and continue to buy used tools. So yeah, that's, I know that's been talked about in the
Craigslist
chat. Yeah. Craigslist is your very good friend. And like people, like, you know, like there are so many older, you know, people who don't do woodworking anymore that have tools laying around in the corner of their garage that they'd be happy to give you.
Hey, does anyone have an extra table saw?
I mean, dude, you'd be surprised, man. You would be surprised. That kind of stuff, you know, a lot of people are happy to get it out of their space because woodworking tools are immensely space, you know, they're huge space hogs. So, yeah. All right, James, so if you were buying new tools, what would you get?
So buying new, I always purchase tools with the idea of a specific project in mind. Mm-hmm. And I really think that whenever building a shop, the first project someone should do is building their own bench. And so everything would be going for that. So you need a set of chisels and, I just buy the wooden ones from Harbor Freight. $100 worth of the aluminum bar clamps there. For the money, those things just cannot be beaten.
Oh, no, they're awesome.
They're just they're fantastic. You can stiffen them easily with some extra wood through the shaft, and there's a few other things you could do to them to make them perfect. But, yeah, a cross-cut saw from the big box store. It's going to be a hard point saw, but it's going to last you for a long time. You're never going to be able to sharpen it, and when it's dull, you'll throw it away. But, hey, it was $10.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can buy a rip saw on eBay for about $50 that someone has restored, and it'll last you for the rest of your life. Planes, that's where the money starts coming in when you're buying new. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of the Veritas brand. Their new ones are phenomenal. I think for the money, they're what I would shoot for.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're talking for a smoothing plane, a jack, and then a joiner, you've blown the rest of your budget.
Mm-hmm.
So it's once you have the saws, the chisels, and the planes, you can, number one, make any other tool you need. And number two, you can pretty much do just about anything you want with those items. It's a very versatile system.
So have you tried any of the Stanley, the Sweetheart planes, any of those? I mean, they're more expensive than their dirt cheap ones.
The new ones coming out?
I don't know. I think they're already out. I've seen them on like Home Depot.
Well, no, like
website.
The ones that have started coming out in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ones that I have tried have surprised me at how well they have worked.
Mm-hmm.
They do not, for me, inspire quality work. They don't feel quality.
Yeah.
They have aluminum parts and plastic parts, and they just, I don't know, for some reason that just makes me feel like I'm not working with what I want.
Well, and it's, not going to necessarily hold up over time like something like, I mean, Veritas, their tools are amazing. Those planes are so nice.
I'd honestly rather go with a Wood River, the cheap Chinese stuff, than I would with the new Stanley.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's only a little bit more to jump into Veritas stuff, and it's worth every penny.
Yeah, I was looking at that, because last episode, if you guys didn't hear, we had a big discussion on quality versus quantity, went into the Wood River stuff, and I was looking at the prices, and like the difference between a Veritas jack plane and a Wood River is only like $50. And that is crazy that a, Canadian-made product with probably much higher quality steel in the blade, I would have to imagine, way more R&D behind the product. It's crazy. And also, speaking of that, I misspoke a little bit in the last podcast. I was saying that Wood River knocked off Veritas, but they knocked off Lee Nielsen. I got that mixed up. So if you compare like the Lee Nielsen jack plane, low-angle jack, to the Wood River, they are exactly perfect carbon copies. So that's what.
Yeah, and Lee Nielsen actually runs off of the patents from the pre-war Stanleys.
Yep.
They've made quite a few other changes, but that's what they're trying to mimic the bedrock style.
Yep. Cool. So you would recommend, so which three hand planes again, to summarize?
Number four smoother, a number five jack plane, and then like a number seven joiner.
Okay, cool.
With those three, you can do just about anything. I mean, if you're really strapped, you can do it all with the number four or possibly the number five, but it's good to have the selection to work with.
Yeah, I think I would like to add a jointer plane to my arsenal. That's the one of the list you mentioned that I do not have, so...
What was that?
a jointer plane, the number 7.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I just have a low angle jack, a block plane, and a you know, 4 or 4.5. I can't remember. It's one of the two. But yeah. All right. Well, so I am gonna go. I'm just gonna go a little bit of a different route. My list is would have been very similar to Zach's. I just want to just you know give a counterpoint, I guess.
Sure, it would have.
Well, that's basically how I started. I mean, exactly what you recommended is exactly how I got into this stuff. I bought a drill and driver set like 3 years ago for grinding my homebrew grains, and because the cordless drill was way faster than hand cranking it, and then just happened. So I had that sitting around for years. It was the 12-volt, you know, DeWalt stuff, and then when we moved in this house, I bought a sliding miter saw from Ryobi for like $180, and I built a bunch of stuff with those tools. I think my dad gave me some of his old tools, like a old circular saw, old jigsaw, that kind of stuff. So that got me started. But okay, so my list, I would say, I personally think a table saw is the most important tool in a woodworking shop. I think it is just the centerpiece of any shop, and I think you can do so much on it that you can do with a lot of these other tools. I think table saw or miter saw, that's a tough choice, but like we were saying before, you can do pretty much everything you can do with a miter saw on a table saw, especially if you have a circular saw as well. So I would say invest in a table saw, and you don't need to go, you know, buy a cabinet saw, because you probably wouldn't be able to get one for that budget and get a couple other tools. But I was using the DeWalt job site saw. It's, I think, $550-ish. They have a cheaper version of that. It's got a little less cut capacity, and it doesn't have a stand. If any of you guys have seen Darbin Orver's channel, she used this DeWalt saw for forever. You can do pretty much everything with it. I mean, it's, you know, the more expensive version, the $500-and-whatever version, has a 32-inch rip capacity. You know, it's got pretty solid dust collection. You know, it can run a dado stack. It does a lot that, you know, I thought that the upgrade from that saw to the saw stop would be some crazy, like, eureka moment or something, but it was a big upgrade, but it was not like some life-changing upgrade. Like, the DeWalt made great cuts. It you know, had enough power to do most stuff, and so that's where I would start. I think a table saw, especially with a dado stack, you can do so much with that stuff, especially if you're in a furniture building. Yeah. If you're going to be doing any sort of cabinet work or anything like that, I think a table saw is huge, because trying to get those perfectly square cuts with a circular saw and a straight edge is really hard. You know, I mean, building that J. Bates miter saw station with a circular saw would have been, I think that would have driven me like up the wall. And it wouldn't have turned out as nice, you know, because you just don't get a square of cuts. So
yeah, and there's something I'd add along with that too. I mean, if it depends on what's out there. I mean, I would change my list if there were a great table saw or something on Craigslist. But as far as, you know, I kind of built the list with, okay, you have $1,000 and you can only buy new tools because you can't, you know, it's hard to predict what tools are going to be available for people on Craigslist. But, you know, certainly if you can get a good solid table saw for, you know, $500 or less on Craigslist, do it. I mean, I think.
And you should be able to.
Yeah, and what you were saying, I mean, I'm a big proponent of cabinet saws, and you can get them if you're willing to. I mean, I have a 60s Delta Unisaw, which is I love the thing. I bought that thing, and I just had to work on the starter capacitor or something. I had to sand down the contacts inside of the motor, which was really easy. I think I paid $500 for it, and put a really nice fence on there. That's the most important thing I think about a table saw. If you can't put a good fence on there, if it doesn't have a solid fence, or you can't upgrade, don't buy it. Because that is, and not just for convenience and you know, being able to make accurate cuts, but for safety. If your fence doesn't lock down straight and true, then you're asking for you know, kickback, and there's there's a host of problems. You know, you do actually want your fence to be angled out. I have a video on it, but I think it's like a 64th of an inch to kind of avoid kickback or binding against the fence. So that's kind of off topic, but just something to keep in mind. The list can change depending on what's, you know, used available. But yeah, table saw is certainly a necessity at some point.
Well, and that's, I think, another reason why I liked that DeWalt job site saw so much is if you guys have ever tried any of the DeWalt stuff, like when you're at Home Depot or whatever, they have this really unique fence system that they call like the rack and pinion system. And so basically, you know, you unlock the, you know, the lock for the fence, and you use a little knob to turn it back and forth. So you can actually dial it in really precisely. Like, I actually liked the fence on the DeWalt better than the Biesmeyer style fence that comes with like every nice table saw out there. So,
what, you mean not like racking on it with your knuckles to move it over an inch?
Dude, that, like, when I got it, I was like, is this really what I'm upgrading to? Like, is this standard in table saws? Like, I could not understand how that, you know, whole, you know, what's it, you know, just, you know, tap and pray method is acceptable, you know, because, I mean, it's so easy to be off by even a 16th of an inch. I mean, gosh, you know, it's a, that system I don't love. So I have almost immediately upgraded my saw stop fence with the Incra fence, and it kind of shares some similarities with the DeWalt one in a way, because it's got this kind of adjustment knob that you can kind of fine tune exactly the size of your cut. So I really liked that. But yeah, so I would say a table saw, so that's like 560. I would probably add a dado stack, but I'm not going to add it because you can really do, it just takes longer, but you can cut dados with a standard blade. You just got to make a bunch of passes. I mean, that's another $100. So obviously if, for a good one, you're probably looking at about $100. So, you can incorporate that into your budget if you want. One tool I added that I didn't hear from you guys was a shop vac. I don't think I could woodwork without some way to collect dust, especially since table saw was the number one tool for me. I think number two would be a shop vac. You know, $60 on
Father's
Day.
Shop vac just doesn't
handle
my curls, though.
Yeah, no, it doesn't handle your curls. Although, if you got something like some sort of separator cyclone like we were talking about in the last episode, it would. I mean, it can...
Oh, no, they actually, like, get clogged up in a 2-inch hose.
Oh, really? Oh, wow, man.
Inside the hose.
Some big shavings. That's that's crazy.
This is getting weird. Curlies and big shavings and...
Woodworking has some like inherently sexual terminology for sure. It's like golf, you know, balls and shafts. You know, it's just all
a lot of mortise and tenon going on there.
Yeah. But yeah, so a shop vac and probably a dust separator. Although I don't have that. I think that's kind of optional. And then next would be a drill driver set. You know, obviously, I don't think. Yeah, it would be very tough unless you're James to do woodworking without a drill and driver. And I think having that impact driver is such a nice addition. Like, instead of to change from a drill bit to a driving bit back and forth and back and forth, that just kills your efficiency. You're much better off just getting that kind of package deal there. Okay, so with the table saw, the shop vac, and the drill driver, you're probably looking at about $850 or so. So I would say next, possibly a jigsaw, because obviously the table saw really can only make straight cuts. So if you want to make any sort of curved cuts, I think a jigsaw is pretty good. I would not cheap out on a jigsaw. Jigsaws can be a real pain in the butt if you buy a cheap one and they leave a really crappy cut and you don't get a square cut. So I would invest in a good jigsaw. If you're doing, you know, batteries for your drill driver, I would just get a cordless jigsaw with the same battery platform. That's what I did. And then with the final, like, $60, I would buy a project from the Wood Whisperer Guild, because I think...
Ooh, wise move.
Yeah, I think that is some of the most valuable dollars that you could spend. Because or whatever you're into, you know, whether that's the hand tool school, if you're more of a hand tool guy, but paying for some more in-depth learning material or books or, you know, again, if you're listening to this, you're probably into video learning. So I would say, you know, Wood Whisperer and Hand Tool School are great. I think there's just so much to learn from those guys that you're not going to learn just watching random YouTube videos, or at least you're not going to learn as quickly. So,
yeah, books are a good resource too.
Totally.
I've learned a lot from books.
I have a hard time though. I feel like woodworking and just any sort of kind of making instruction is so much better when you can A, see it in person. That's number one. But then number two behind that would be a video, because there's so many techniques, like so many little nuances that I feel like are lost in text, you know, especially with any sort of like with hand tool stuff, any of that biomechanics stuff. It would be really hard to write a book about that, I feel like, you know. It's much easier to show that in the video.
Yeah, I mean, there's other stuff, you know. I always just feel like, you know, with whatever downtime I have, you know, I'm working not for very long, but I've been working a couple days a week, helping out for Harley. And like during my lunch breaks, I'm like, okay, well, I might as well do something I want to do. So I usually read something, and it's not usually a how-to book. It's usually informational, you know, yeah, like spray finishing or, you know, how to do something or how something works. The
yeah,
understanding
more in-depth
wood
stuff.
By Bruce, I think Bruce Hoadley, Understanding Wood. It's not the most exciting read, but you will learn a ton as far as wood movement and different, you know, ring porous versus diffuse porous, you know, just terminology. And, you know, most of it probably won't stick, but some of it will. And then as you get further along, you'll have that for a reference.
Yeah, definitely.
That's kind of the Bible. As far as I can tell, that's like the Bible of kind of understanding wood. It's go figure.
Make sure to add that to the show notes, because I don't think I've read that or even heard of that so I would like to read that.
I'll look.
So I just looked at the time, man. We've been yapping. Okay, so that's going to end our $1,000 tool budget, and in the next episode we're going to talk about the $1,000 to upgrade. So that'll be another kind of follow-up to this one. This is really going to end up being a two-parter. So let's go ahead and close this episode off with what we've been watching. Who wants to go?
I've been watching a guy in Argentina called Daniel Slovao. I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Slovao.
I've tried several times. He's another hand tool guy down in Argentina, and he is doing some really seriously cool things. He has a bow lathe, so that the piece you're working on rotates two rotations away from you, and then two rotations toward you, and then two rotations away from you, and then two rotations toward you. And if you've ever seen someone work with those, it's fantastic. But he does a lot of really interesting, unique things. And his most recent project actually has a little bit of wiring and lighting in it. And just all around really, really cool channel.
Man, that is that sounds awesome. I'll definitely have to check that out. I have not heard of him, and I feel like I try to be in every little nook and cranny of YouTube. So
yeah, he only has like 500 or so subscribers, and it won't be that way long.
Cool. Yeah, I'll definitely check him out. How about you, Zach? What have you been looking at?
You know, I don't really I don't watch a whole lot. I do, you know, there's a few,
you know, it's whatever content you've been consuming. Doesn't have to be.
Yeah. I've still been thumbing through that book that I mentioned last week. It's not in the room, so I don't remember the name of it. It's Chris Schwarz.
The Shaker
American Furniture or something like that. But as far as YouTube, you know, I do have my regulars. I feel like I don't let myself watch videos because I know I'm going to get sucked into them. Like Jimmy Dresta, I always watch his stuff because I even wrote it on a comment today. I'm like, every time I see a new video of him, I'm like, all right, Jimmy, how are you? Like, what do you got left, man? Like, how are you going to impress me? It's like a challenge. And every single time, like I just watched the walnut table one today. I think I watched one or two of them. But yeah, he always does something. Yeah, that's what it was. It was a walnut table. And he actually, you know, you've seen the router sleds where people flatten slabs.
Oh,
he put it in like the CNC. Yeah, and I mean,
that was Beefwood, not Walnut.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I was yeah. trying to think if that was a different Walnut, because obviously he's built like, you know, probably 8 Walnut.
Yeah, no,
it was
Beefwood. Yeah. That's just ridiculous sounding.
That was really interesting the way he flattened it on the CNC. That was kind of an out of the box episode.
Yeah, I just. But yeah, every time I'm like, what are you gonna do? Like, what are you gonna do that I'm gonna go, holy crap, I've never seen that before. And every time, like every video he does, it's something. Yep. I'm like, damn it.
I love that leg design too, man. It was really simple but really cool. It was definitely weird that he didn't attach it to the top, but I guess he's gonna move it or whatever. But I was waiting on how he's gonna attach it, and then it just never happened. So
yeah, Jimmy Duresta. I'm still watching the Slingshot channel. I watched the Airzooka today, which is just unbelievable. The him firing that thing is just nuts. And then I did find something that really made me laugh. Where I have it queued up here. It's called Mini Materials is the name of the channel, and. The video I watched, it's the mini woodworking rustic end table. This table is like an inch by an inch by an inch. And he makes it all with like mini tools. So he has like a cross cut, like handsaw. That's like an inch long. Like he's using it with his fingers. And it's just so ridiculous that it's hilarious.
I wonder where he's getting his tools. Cause that Marco Terenzi guy, I saw him at WIA and saw his little dude, low angle jack plane. That was like an inch and a half long, fit in the palm of my hand, and was completely functional in every way, movable mouth and all that stuff. Just like, you know, a Lee Nielsen one. It was unreal. Unreal.
Yeah, I don't know, but just watching him use that little handsaw, and he's like just moving his fingers.
That's awesome.
It's hilarious. So that yeah, that's awesome. I did watch a few videos this week. Those were them.
Nice. Well, my shout out's going to be to a guy named Tim Yoder. So I somehow had missed him until today. And probably because I've just got my lathe and have been going down that rabbit hole. But this dude does like TV episode style YouTube videos. Like they're 30 minutes long, really, really well done, and just awesome. He's a super talented wood turner. He's got like 25,000 subscribers, so I'm not really sure how he wasn't in my periphery. But yeah. Awesome wood turner. If you're at all into turning, you probably are already familiar with him, but if you aren't, definitely check him out. He's got a really good kind of sense of humor, but it's kind of a throwback to, you know, something like you know, New Yankee Workshop or something like that, where it's an actual good quality 30-minute show about woodworking that's not, you know, just total garbage and like reality TV. So really, really good stuff. So that's my shout out for this week. So I think that's probably going to do it for this episode. I think we've yammered long enough. So again, come back for part two, where we will talk about expanding our shop with another $1,000. So that'll be fun. If you guys don't already, go ahead and get subscribed to the podcast and give us a review on iTunes. That is super helpful. And if you want to see the show notes for this episode, go to craftedpodcast.com/5. So that's where all the links to the stuff we talked about in this episode, the tools and the books and all that kind of stuff. So anything else you guys want to add before we close out?
Looking forward to the next one.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks again, guys. And until next time, happy building, everybody.
See y'all later.
Goodbye.